Salutations, everybody. It is Maddie here today with episode 151 of the Ham Radio Podcast.
And it's me, Carrick, with ACG.
No guest this week. As always, if you'd like to support the show, Patreon is linked down below. $1 a month will get you early access to the podcast, as well as a SoundCloud link. If that's not your speed, then we also have mobile links for every Sunday when the podcast goes live on iTunes and Google Play. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to this week's show. It is a exciting week for myself personally as a gigantic Spider-Man fan. Carrick, we've talked about this game extensively in the past. You know, you brought to light some issues that could be with the title, and I agreed with you. But now we got a huge dump of info for Spider-Man. There was a 114-question rapid-fire interview by Game Informer. We got a release date of September 7th. Collector's Edition that's at the price of $150. On top of that, we also have post-launch content coming into the game, although we just know it's missions and suits. We got a lot, and we've seen a little bit more with the gameplay. What are your takeaway for this batch of info?
I mean, it looks awesome. There was a couple issues that it'll be something that'll wait until review to even worry about. But there was a couple little animation things I noticed. But when it comes to Spider-Man, one of the things I've always liked in the movies and stuff is when he runs along the side of a building. And they cut, there was a GIF, however people pronounce it, of him running along the building, and he ran for like 30 steps. Mm. And I was like, so gravity doesn't affect him? But then in a different section, gravity not only affects him, it affects stuff around him, physics and stuff. So I think hopefully what they're doing is they're going for the game, you know, the gamified. They're just like, it won't be perfectly realistic. Which I think that's what I've always wanted, except their environments looked realistic. Like, yes. The environments in that trailer looked fucking insane, which I think will cause some people to be like, well, if that's realistic, why isn't this? And I'm just telling people, don't stress that so much. I mean, it's a Spider-Man game. It's like they're going to make the world look cool because they can and because we have console power today, because it is just a console game to do it. They're shooting for 30 frames per second, which...
Even on PS4 that's the, Pro.
Yeah, I will say that's the one thing that does. I'm definitely don't have to have a 60 FPS, lock on games, but a Spider-Man game, I will say I was a little surprised. I was a little surprised by that. As good as it looks, it makes sense. But
yeah,
I was sort of thinking it might be 60.
I can understand what you mean by the animation, the gravity. I think they're definitely gamifying it because.
Yeah,
a lot of people, when they look back and they go, like, what's the best Spider-Man game? I feel like these people haven't played it in a while because I went back and played it, and it just hasn't aged as well in many ways. But Spider-Man 2 is usually the one that people go to. And I'm not dissing on anyone. I love that game. I played it so much as a kid. It was disgusting. Like, I remember vividly playing it for weeks, months. It's insane. I love that game so much. But anyway... that game was very gamified, whereas you, like, for example, held down the jump button, Spider-Man would crouch, and then he'd start shaking, and you could leap a building in one jump. And it's like, you know, he was a superhero, but then they gamified it, and it made it more fun. So I think Insomniac's good at that type of stuff, making their universes believable, yet fun to be a part of. What caught me off guard was the release date, September 7th. Very soon... obviously trying to beat out Red Dead Redemption
Red
2
Dead.
Like many other games.
yeah.
you know, but I saw that it was alpha gameplay. And, you know, I'm not 100% sure on how game development entirely works in that point where, like, was this late alpha where, you know, is this game going to have a lot of crunch and rushing towards the end? Because, I mean, I think of it this way. Although I don't think we ever got... direct confirmation. When I think of a 5-month span between announcement and release, I instantly think Fallout 4. And I remember they were like, yeah, I think they said at some point, like, this is the final version of the game. Like, what you're seeing is what you're going to get. And with this one, we're seeing an earlier version. We're seeing cool stuff, but will that translate to the final product?
I think it will because it was delayed, right? I thought this was already delayed once.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure, because didn't we talk about it?
Days Gone? Is that what you're thinking of?
I'm trying to think what Days Gone is. Oh, Days Gone is the zombie thingy, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, for some reason I thought Spider-Man, they were thinking last winter and then they delayed it. I could be wrong. But regardless, what the reason why I was going to bring that up is because it looks far enough along.
Okay.
Like, obviously, I mean, even as an alpha, like if somebody said that that was an alpha, I wouldn't immediately say that it's going to look worse or better when it gets released. Its frame rate was pretty solid during those moments. And if they're showing people, like if they're showing, well, you know, we were talking about this prior to the podcast, depending on who you're showing and what they can say. Mm-hmm. But if you're showing companies your footage and stuff, I would assume, and you're this far along, I would assume, you know, that they've got it well in hand. It looked smooth as hell when he was, well, for 30 FPS, it looked smooth as hell. So I think they're probably fine now.
Yeah, that's the thing that I took away. Very, especially with the combat and the web swinging, it looked tremendous. It looked silky, yeah. I think is the best way to describe it. I mean, when he went from these nice parkour backflips to sprinting up a wall, leaping onto a perch, then leaping over another building, I couldn't believe it. It was like, this is only something you could really do in a game, but that you would only see in a movie. It looked so much fun. It was one of those games that once you saw the footage for it, you're like, I need my hands on this. It's like going from point A to point B. It's going to be like Sunset Overdrive, in my opinion, in a way where it's like going just to your quest objectives. It's going to be probably the most fun you have because it's just so much to play with.
Did it also look, maybe I was wrong, but it looked way better than the QTE moments that they showed. What I mean, I don't mean that the gameplay looked better. I mean the graphics actually looked a lot better than the one video we saw. Remember that one trailer that had like a bunch of QTE and him on a crane and all this QTE stuff? I swear to God that didn't look anywhere near like as real. It almost looked more cartoony and stuff. So I was impressed by that. Yeah, I mean, it also depends on, you know, what do they fill the world with? Like, if it's filled with Peter Parker delivering pizzas, I'm not going to be happy, well, even though that's a part of his life. But I don't want it filled with a bunch of random shit. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting to see how they do that. I did like the idea that you get different items in the game. It's lore, and then that's it. There was somebody in Game Informer, I think, was saying that, you know, there's things you can get in the game, and when you do, you get some info about the backstory, and then it's not a collectible per se. It's more of a, you know, some info about the backstory.
Yeah, I have yet to. I think you were listening to the Game Informer show. I was actually going to listen to that at some point today, but I was caught up editing videos. That's one thing that I was concerned about. So that's definitely good to hear. But I do remember during the rapid fire interview, the creative director had stated he was like, "There's no pizza delivery missions," and I think he said there's good. No like saving the balloons, that type of stuff. And while that's minimal, right, that doesn't mean like, oh, well, there's definitely going to be good content. They could just make another form of a fetch quest. It shows that they're making a choice that for some reason other developers just wouldn't do, which is leaving behind the Spider-Man tropes that plagued the series. The ones that, you know, were fun on Spider-Man 2 on the PS2 or the Xbox original. But that's why I said also the game didn't age as well, because you go back to that game and you're saving kids' balloons, you're stopping bank robbers, and
what's the shitty pizza one? Was it what's the terrible one? Is that Amazing? Is that Amazing Spider-Man? Where
Amazing Spider-Man 2 was an awful crime game.
Where the crime would crank up. Oh.
Two. Yep, that man, was terrible.
What a! I don't even know how to describe an idea for a game that's so bad. Mm-hmm. So, everything I saw and the different little element I've seen and different bullet points people broke down the video and stuff look like, I mean, if you like Spider-Man, I would assume you're probably going to like it anyway. But what it did impress me is it looked like you said, they're sort of understanding where the game industry is, and there might be a chance of having some fans, you know, jump in. I also think that a lot of people missed out on Batman until like the second or third game. Maybe even the third or fourth game. And so it's cool for another superhero, because there is no Batman against Spider-Man this time. What I mean for sales, it's just like
Spider-Man.
The superhero game is Spider-Man. Yeah. And so I think that's awesome, because it doesn't allow for like the direct comparisons, like, well, it's not Batman because Batman mm-hmm. has it. It's like, okay, you know what? It's his own thing. It allows them to release it at a time when, other than Red Dead, I mean, I don't think people compare Spider-Man to Red Dead too much.
I hope
so.
Not.
yeah, it looked, I mean, a lot of it looked really, really good. Also, I saw that there were some gadgets and some different webs,
yeah.
but that'll be more interesting to see, like, your skill tree, because I didn't really understand where Peter Parker was in his skills in the video. So if he's low, then you're going to be learning all this stuff, obviously, as you go yeah. on. But they could also do something where maybe he's been around. I thought originally when I read the backstory for this, I thought for some reason that this was more of a Spider-Man who's been around for a little while.
He's been around for 8 years at this
okay.
point.
8 years, thank you. Yeah, okay, yeah. So that was us. So that's I hope there's no dissonance there. What I hope is don't do the thing like they did in Horizon Zero Dawn or even Fallout games where they're like, you've lived here for 20 years, but you can't remember where the fucking town 3 miles that way is.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be interesting to see, like, does he have these skills or some of these skills right away? That'll be exciting because I would rather have a mature, somewhat well-lubed Batman or Spider-Man versus having to do the climb and pick mm-hmm. and being like, okay, I got double, you know, missile types of webbing. Now I've got this type of webbing. I'm not 100% sure I would be as excited.
We saw in Spider-Man Homecoming, I won't spoil it for those who haven't seen it, but there's the movie where Peter's messing around with his new suit and there's like a million to one different.
Yeah, because doesn't she say? She says, like, there are 290 configurations.
Yeah, and they actually, like, go through some cool ideas. And I was sitting there, like, I hope they're taking notes because some of the things they said, it was for comic relief. But I was sitting there, like, hey, this is pretty cool sounding. I love that. Like, the electric webs. I've always said, and I said this in my video, I'll say it again. I thought the core for a good Spider-Man game would be utilizing the web as much as you can and using the Peter Parker that creates tons of gadgets, you know, that's how you do it. Because you look at what made Batman popular. If I'm honest, like, when you look at how many games have mimicked the free flow system, it's kind of become a thing where it's still fun. It's still satisfying. And I don't think any other game outside of Rocksteady, maybe Mad Max did it really well, but outside of Rocksteady, you know, that's the best that it's going to get.
Yeah.
But it's definitely gotten, I don't think repetitive is the right word, but what I'm saying is what brought the relief to that system was the gadgets that Batman got in each game that added some more elements, ways to stun, ways to take down enemies. And so with Spider-Man, I think because it's about the webs, about bringing enemies together, that definitely looks interesting. What I also really liked was from what I've seen in the combat and what I've read, it doesn't seem there's a counter button. It's more like you get a spider sense. You can obviously see the person because it's a third person game coming in to attack you. And you can only evade. So it's like you're, you know, like in the movies, he beats the hell out of one guy and then someone's about to hit him from behind and he hops over to the right and gets Joe Schmo in the back and starts kicking his ass. So I like that too because, you know, the Batman Arkham, you know, like we were talking about gameplay dissonance where all of a sudden he can just hear this thug and like grab his arm and break it like in an instant. I love it. It was so satisfying. It was fun as hell. But It would make
it doesn't
more
fit.
Sense. Yeah, it would make more sense for Spider-Man, right? But it because of the gameplay tropes that have come into play with superhero games for so long, I think it's good that they're doing more of an evade system rather than a counter.
Well, and remember, I'm not talking about the newest movie, but I think it was the original with Tobey Maguire and what's his name? The Green Goblin. But the Green Goblin kicks his ass. Mm-hmm. Like, anytime he does try to block, he gets his ass just ruined.
Yeah.
And thrown different places. So I actually think that would be really cool if this version is more of the evade, not the counter. Because the counter is weird. He's a small kid. And yeah, he's got, you know, he does have some strength and stuff like that. But being strong doesn't mean you magically are impervious to physical damage. So Batman's wearing a cowl, fucking body armor. And, you know, so the idea that Spider-Man's not stupid and isn't like, I'll just take the shot, but instead is like leaping away. That could be, I mean, it'll probably replace it. Let's be honest. It'll probably replace the counter button. But at least it will fit Spider-Man and not have him be Batman but in a red suit, which is what I'm hoping for.
What do you think of the environmental interaction? Kind of little sleeping dogs in there where you can, for example, grab the wood pallet. You can grab an air conditioning vent, whip it around your head. where do they go with that? You know, because it's obviously going to be him grabbing items from the environment. Do you think it just stays limited to just random cans and shit around the field, or do you have any specific ideas that come to mind?
I would assume what they'll do is they'll do a system where you have like a skeleton of a building and then you build a model over it. So you'll see that sometimes with other games for various reasons. There's like almost two models, one that's normal, one that's damaged. Right. I could see them saying, okay, these are buildings. We're drawing these buildings out. And then on the buildings are these decals, these models that can be broken and can be torn off. And so what you end up having is not like a fully destructible building. That'd be ridiculous. But instead you have like... Yeah, especially with Spider-Man, but you have, you know, like bits of, you always see this in the Spider-Man movies too. He's always going up and down the fire escape on the outside of his window. It happened in the first movie, happens in the second movie, and happens in Homecoming. Maybe not Homecoming, sorry. It happens in all movies.
He climbs through a window at the end of Homecoming.
Okay. Yeah. So, yes, he does. Yeah, he does. And because his aunt comes in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, to me... I would assume things like that can be like torn off. You know, that could be very cool. Anything on the roofs, like the air conditioning vents, those. I would say that we won't see a ton of stuff. It'll most likely be just like you said, like the sort of the shit that they, you know, lay around. But I'm assuming also a number of the things that you will be able to do will most likely be throwing enemies into other enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Or doing something of that. They did show a little bit of that already, but I'm assuming that'll be a big part. It's in every one of the comic books. It's in all of the fiction where that's a big thing, where it's like, you know, I'll, you know, stick you to the wall. I'll do this. I'll have you swing over and bump into this guy because it's a little less physical, right, than mm-hmm. Batman. It's a little less evil.
Breaky, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The Steven Seagal of superheroes where he's just like, he's just breaking arms. So, yeah, Insomniac's probably the right company to handle all of that. They sort of understand the subtlety of it. So
it looks
good. The destructible stuff looks fun. The one thing that I couldn't understand, and maybe you saw this, but so a couple of the Spider-Mans, you've been able to fling your, you know, web, ejaculate your web into the air and it sticks to a cloud. Like you don't really see what it sticks to. Am I wrong, or did you always see what it stuck to in these trailers? It looked like it in a couple of the little short movies I saw, where it doesn't go like straight up skyward ever. It always appears to go right to the building. Yeah,
yeah, I noticed.
Is that
right?
Too.
Yeah, it seemed like it was always attached to a building. That's one thing that Enox always did. They always made sure it was attached to the buildings, because I remember the original Spider-Man games on the 64, the PS1, the first Spider-Man Tobey Maguire game on the PS2. Like you just like shoot it into the clouds and just web swing away, and you're like,
yeah,
I'll take it, you know, sure. But that's definitely something I noticed, especially since they have a U-turn thing that you can do that like attaches to buildings and whips you around without ruining the momentum, or where you can like turn corners hard, that type of thing. So I think it's very reliant on the attachment of buildings. I know that sounds crazy to say, right? It's you should assume it should be that way with a Spider-Man game, but we've seen Spider-Man games without it.
Yeah.
What it got me thinking about was, you know, Insomniac, like you said, perfect fit, it feels like, and it seems to be going really well. I also wonder, what other superhero games would you like to see, maybe from a certain studio? I would answer this question. I think we actually talked about this a little bit.
We have,
Where I've talked about TMNT and Rocksteady, but I'd love to hear your quick hot take on this one.
I think we talked about it one time with Lone, and I had brought up Arrow, but it's a little bit of a copy of Batman, obviously. So to me, I do believe that it's time to do this, and I'm not 100%. We talked about this in the Discord, actually, for a couple hours this last weekend, trying to figure out how you would do it. But I would like a video game, superhero game that was actually a super villain. And there's various reasons why. It's not a Star Wars thing where we're going to pretend. It would be somebody who would have to be a villain in Batman or Spider-Man's world, that kind of stuff. And you have to understand, like, how do you, in a superhero, most of the time the superhero fights because people are dying, right? Or money's being stolen. There's these things that are removing the safety of the world from the populace, and so the superhero steps in. But the supervillain's different. Are you gonna have them fucking murdering cops? That would be sort of creepy. Mm-hmm. It, just like to a lot of people, it's creepy in GTA to kill random civilians. So if anybody gets mad at me for saying that, I mm-hmm. feel that that's noticeable both sides. But I would love to see a villain game. I would fucking kill to see them try, what's his name, Deadshot.
Interesting. See, I'm thinking, but like...
how? Like, that would be...
Very, yeah, very interesting. Like, my first thought was the Joker. I don't know why. Maybe because I've had so much experience, like many others, with the Batman Arkham games. So you almost put a reverse twist on that, mm-hmm. where... you know how, like, in Ubisoft games, you'll be able to, like, go to the computer and, like, you'll send out, like, this group of people on this convoy, and they'll, while you're doing other missions, they'll get you right. items and stuff. For some reason, like, one of the first thoughts I had with a Joker game is, like, you can do something like that where you send your thugs to capture X amount of civilians while you're off doing missions in the open world itself. I think for it to work, whatever villain it is, it would have to be a very dynamic, interactive world, because I don't know why I'm also thinking of Divinity Original Sin 2, where you can, you know, we'll say pretend you can be the villain and create so much chaos in this world space because everything is interactable and anyone can die. And it's like, I feel to make a villain game, you need to give them that free reign to be the villain. You know, when you're playing as a superhero, there are constraints because you are the hero. You don't want to beat up civilians.
Exactly, exactly.
So it's like, you got to take the reins off and just let them be. It's like, how do you do that? What villain do you pick? Those types of things. And I mean, I think that the Joker has one of the more interesting origin stories, where it could be a really good story, but how do you give that free rein?
I would also rather see him skip, because like the Joker's the easy way out, I think, mm-hmm. in some ways, but I think he's the hardest in others, and one of those is traversal of the world. The Joker's basically in a fucking ice cream truck or, you know, driving around. That's not going to be super enjoyable compared to a high-tech villain, mm-hmm. or, you know, so you have to look at like if it's an open world, by the way, if it's more of a hub-based thing, then we're talking about something different. True. But I think that he's hard. I think Killer Croc could be amazing using the sewers and having a world based in the sewer, like having your world and your activities based upside down, really not mm-hmm. from walking on the street and then, you know, the sewers are below you but the world is above you, and the sense of isolation or being an alien that Killer Croc could possibly have. The thing is also, they have to be physical and smart, and so then you look at Bane, but Bane has they've so fucked up Bane lately that all he is a roided out, like, sort of muscle monster now. Mm-hmm. So I think for a lot of fans, they don't really understand that he's supposed to be incredibly intelligent when he's not on the juice.
Yeah.
So to me, there are a ton. It just depends on how you would go about it. And I would love to see it, because if you don't do that, dude, then you get an Arrow, which I love, but do you really want a copy of Batman? Like, because that's what it would be. I mean, how would it not be a copy of Batman? It's a fucking really rich dude who has bad shit happen and decides to save the city.
Yeah.
So,
exactly. You know, and the other thing I was thinking is, when we're playing the hero, the developers usually like, how many villains can we fit in for the hero to take on?
Right.
Say you're the villain, you got to pick a villain that could take on X amount of heroes.
That the heroes would maybe come out if you did the crimes.
Yeah.
Like, what if the bosses came because you were doing these things, mm-hmm. which could be cool. But I get what you mean. You mean physically or mentally be able to take them on. That's
because, like, you look at Arkham City, and, like, there was Mr. Freeze. There was obviously the Joker. There was,
right.
you know, Clayface.
Well, Deadshot.
Mm-hmm.
He's fairly good.
That would be a good pick. Yeah, it's just, it's like you said, world traversal. It would bring up obstacles, because every superhero is like decked out to beat the villain.
Yeah.
So how do you make a villain that can beat the
heroes? My God. Oh, what if you mixed in Overlord? Did you remember that game? You remember Overlord?
Overlord.
Where you control minions? What if you were like, it had a minion system? You're running around fighting Batman or the good guys, and you could be like,
I like
you know, minions attack, you know, and those guys would leap on him and like hold him as you're punching him or whatever.
That'd be interesting. It's just any version I've thought of it, I think of it almost like a strategy game,
almost
a civilization game, something along those lines, where, like I said, you'd have to have a highly interactable world that allows for anything. And when it comes to a villain, does like that action style Batman Arkham or Spider-Man PS4 style work? It's hard to really think of one. I'd love to hear the comments, because I like my comic books. I'm still very new to them, so I'm sure there's someone out there who is very into comics and go like, "Hey, what about this guy?" I mean, I'm thinking of like the Injustice roster.
And like, yeah, that's what I always cheat, use that kind of stuff too. I'll be like, who's Black Manta or Black Ray or whatever the fuck his name is. Like, I'll just go in my brain through them all.
Well, I'd also love that, though, is some B-tier heroes to get a game. Or, like I said, ones that are very popular but don't have any video game presence. Like, I don't know how there hasn't been a Flash video game ever. I have no idea.
Yeah, I would like, if it wasn't a villain who was doing shit, and then like maybe B-tier heroes come, try to take him out, and then as you progress in the game, more and more powerful heroes come until your main bad guy is, Superman or something.
Yeah.
If you don't do that, then I think B heroes are the best way to go. And I think that's when you start, or at least, like you said, heroes that haven't seen anything. I am going to be honest, only because I like her in Injustice, but Black Canary's fighting style in Injustice is fucking amazing.
She's cool. Yeah.
And I would actually really like her to be involved. She was phenomenal. Matter of fact, I liked her so much in Injustice, I started reading like various comics to try to find her.
I
liked her that much.
That's what happened with me. I watched Spider-Man Homecoming. I was like, I need to start reading comics, because one Spider-Man movie was not enough, and I went all in on that, and I've been reading comics pretty consistently ever since. How about a Teen Titans game? That's the thing. I think the reason no one goes to villains is because there's so many great heroes and hero groups that haven't gotten their look in video games that, people aren't ready to go to the villains yet. Although, I think instantly, if I saw a game called The Joker, once again, I'm going back to that very cheap example, like, that just... I got to know what that is, man. It's the Joker. Like, this could be amazing.
Well, here's the thing. Think about it this way. When you and I talk about Batman, we do talk about his moves, right? And Steven Seagaling. But at the same time, what did you mention right when we said villain? You said Joker. I think that a lot of people forget that even in the best superhero games, most of the time, it's the villains that sort of truncate out the story. Like, or not truncate, but sort of identify a part of the story. It's like this villain, then this villain. And I think it's time villains get their due. Like, I mean, Teen Titans would be awesome. There's Justice League. There's all these groups, but all they are and all their gameplay would be is the same gameplay remixed in the same way even Spider-Man is remixing it, which is fine, but it is still remixing it, where I do believe a villain would allow you to ask, like, more quandaries. For example, some villains don't kill, right? Some villains, they just steal or whatever. Some villains kill. Some villains are like the Joker, who poisons and in Injustice nukes a city. So you have all of these different ways to go. But with most heroes, most, other than Arrow and a couple others, don't kill. Like, that's their thing. Like you said earlier, they have these limits. I would much rather see us and gamer or developers try to, like, figure out how to put a game in the limits of somebody who does. How do you tell that story without being not morally incorrect? That's the wrong term. What's the term? Like, tasteful, because you don't want a murder simulator. That wouldn't be great. Did you play Punisher on the PS2? Somebody's going to mention this in the Discord, because
you showed me gameplay for that.
He's a good guy, but barely any of those kind. I mean, I agree with you. Teen Titans could be fun, but I don't know why, when you said Teen Titans, I just thought, four mini Batmans.
Cyborg, Beast.
Yeah, I mean, they're not. Like, I'm just, my like brain. Could,
if we really went, like, all in on their qualities. But, yeah, I get what you mean, because it's Robin. So.
And again, it's just, I think the quest progression for a hero is the game we normally get. And the quest progression for a villain could be something that would be truly, like, whoa, what am I doing right now?
You brought up a great point. I don't know if it was intentional, but you were talking about, like, climbing it up. Like, you have, like, this guy, then the Joker. It's like, what if... I'm just going to keep rolling my Joker example, because quite honestly, I can't think of anyone else right now.
That's all
right. It's like, the Joker, I remember, I think it's in Red Hood, he kills Robin, I want to say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and, he annihilates him.
Yeah, and let's say that... as you go along in this story, we're talking about like one, two, three, and however many heroes in this case they want to fit in. Wouldn't it kind of make sense like to pull out the Batman? All right, like you take out Robin. Robin's gone in that Red Hood scenario. Then you
Absolutely.
go to the next step. I don't know who else it would be, like a Batgirl or whatever. Commander, can't remember his name. Commissioner Gordon, there we go, not Commander. Take him out. It's like, all right, that's enough. Batman's come out now. And you know what I'm saying? Like, that's how you can get the story to go along there. I
Yeah,
think
that's
that.
what I was originally saying.
Okay, I'm just
I
making sure.
do. Yeah, I totally agree with you. If you had that progression where it was hero to hero to hero to hero until your main hero was like that you had to fight.
It just feels like when you're the hero, he comes out right away. He doesn't wait for a second, third
True.
mistake. It's how do you explain that within the narrative? Those are.
I would assume you'd explain it. You said B heroes, B like I think we consider them called budget, even though they're not. They do handle smaller people, smaller enemies. So it's like, you know how Batman will be like, even because I'm reading, I started with New 52 because I've always liked their art. So that's what I'm reading through right now. And
Nice.
in Batman, various different Batmans, one of them is called Batman Inc., I think, where he gets Batmans from all over the world. But he doesn't go to every location to handle every crime. He actually, and people make mistakes, including him. You know, I mean, people have died because he hasn't caught the Joker in time, what have you. So I think there's a leeway there. Again, like you said, it all depends on the villain. Like, do you go with the Joker where a lot of people know it, or do you go with something really strange like Reverse Flash Yellow?
That'd be cool.
What's his name? Cyrus?
I
No,
don't
it's
know
not
his name.
Cyrus.
I don't know his name.
But yeah, that would it would
That's
be
a good
fun
idea,
to
though.
see, man. It would be fun to fucking see. It would be fun to see the interactions of those guys, of bad guys grouping up. And then what if a bad guy groups up with you and then he in the story betrays you and now you can take him out because he's a villain. You know, it with
Yeah, it feels like the
attitude.
only time we've had villain focus is like Marvel Ultimate Alliance, a game where it's not really the focus on a particular character, but a big group of them, and just having this big mashup and throw everyone in there, Venom,
Yeah.
whatever, so that's the other thing. I wonder if they feel there's some risk to it, but then again, we're getting a Venom movie,
Maybe
so.
that's all it needs to, dude, is
Oh,
like
jeez.
Insomniac does their thing, and then Venom, if it releases and does well, then, maybe we do
Well,
see a company do this.
I just thought, I don't know why this didn't hit me, this whole conversation, especially since it all starts with Spider-Man. Have you ever played Ultimate Spider-Man? It's a more cartoony graphics one. You play as
It's not the
Spider-Man.
one that goes to the four worlds, is it? The
No,
noir?
that's Shattered Dimensions.
Okay, gotcha. I guess I haven't.
Ultimate Spider-Man is the one where you can switch between Spider-Man and Venom. And when you play as Venom, you can go in the open world. It turns into basically like GTA, where you can run around, you can kill anyone, you can eat anyone, fight anyone. Like, it's crazy. And that was like the perfect blend of playing both the hero and the villain. The game
Yeah,
really
that would
lets
be
you
a
free.
blast.
So I just thought of that as a wonderful example where you could have Flash and Reverse Flash, something along those lines. That'd be very interesting. So there's a potential out there. We'll see if anyone wants to take a dive into that. The next bit of news on the complete other side of the spectrum is Spyro. Spyro Reignited was announced this week after much speculation. As soon as Crash Bandicoot landed, everyone was like, "All right, where's Spyro?" Like day after. So it's finally officially announced. It's coming out September as well. I believe the 21st, sometime in September. And I've never played a Spyro game before. Not even gonna lie. So, Carrick, you got to take the reins here.
I can't.
What?
I've only played like an hour of a Spyro game one time.
No way.
Yeah, I've never been attracted to that character, and so I'm not saying the new stuff I'm not going to jump into because I will. It was that time period where a lot of the games were coming out, right? Like there
Yeah.
was always a mascot. There was a croc, the killer crocodile. If anybody wants to really neuter your childhood, you should go check that one out. There's some shit games. There were some great ones, and I think Crash sort of took the Crash and Ratchet and Clank and the other one, Jack and Dexter. I think those wasn't it Jack and Dexter? Isn't that what it's called?
Yeah, that Sly Cooper.
Sly Cooper, sorry. Those I think just went past Spyro for me, and I just never
Hey,
I've never even touched it.
I was the same way, except I never touched Crash either until just last year.
Oh,
gosh. Yeah, Crash I didn't play at all. But Spyro, this is one that's interesting because, like you said, it was never really that appealing to me. And when it got announced, like, there's a lot of people freaking out. I know it's nostalgia field. I've been there before. But also, you know, I look at it and what my friends are saying. They're like, look, it's actually, like, legitimately good. Like, it's actually fun. So what I think this conversation can bring up is we've talked about remasters. They're endless. It's like everything's getting redone. You and I are on the same page right now. We both have a remaster coming out that we have never touched before. But, you know, there's no experience with the series outside of maybe an hour,
yeah,
if anything. Are you excited? Does this feel like an experience you had to get in on? You know, are you treating this like a new game? What are the emotions going into it?
Zero emotion right now.
Okay.
I normally try not to be too hyped up anyway because you're always going to be like,
yeah.
So I'll wait until like it's very close to release before I start looking at it. I saw a couple little bits of like the trailer or whatever they showed,
mm-hmm,
and that's pretty much. I mean, it's, you know how it is. It's like we'll cover it now, and just there's the thing is people forget that remasters aren't necessarily just for people who are old fans. It might be for a Maddie or a Carrick who hasn't been an old fan who then gets a chance, you know, to play it now, like you did with Crash.
Yeah.
So to me, I'm excited in that way because I'm not somebody who's like, man, I hope this game does poorly. In fact, I hope it does really well. So I hope it's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's just that I step away from it until it gets much closer to release because it didn't interest me a bunch when it first came out. If it was a remake of Ghouls and Ghosts, I don't know if you ever played that when you were younger.
That's a familiar name.
Arthur was in Infinite, Street Fighter versus Capcom Infinite.
Okay. Okay.
That main character was. If it was something I did play, then I would even Croc. it was shit.
Yeah.
Even though Croc would probably have me a little bit more interested. And it doesn't mean it's bad. It just means it's hard, right? Like just because somebody tells you it's awesome, it doesn't really mean a lot,
mm-hmm,
until we get closer to release.
Yeah, it's looking like September's starting to be a packed month. What is it?
Yeah.
Spider-Man. I think Dragon Quest is like another, yep, one that a lot of people are really excited about. I haven't looked into that at all. But and now it's Spyro. And I feel like there's something else, but I'm forgetting.
There is. I think Shinobi, who's been on your podcast, yeah, before, I think Shinobi posted a thing and said something like, September, knock it off or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was
that's the tweet I was referring to in my head. I was like, what was the fucking fourth thing he wrote? I got to look him up now.
Yeah.
I got to look him up. You see, for me, it's like I don't have a reason to be excited because I don't know anything about Spyro other than people really have liked it. But see, I'm anticipating it, but I feel like I'm not going to have the time to play it. It's different where, like, when Crash released, there wasn't a lot, and so I was able just to fly through the games and see,
sure,
what it was about. With this one, it's like, if I'm still playing Spider-Man, see you later, Spyro. I'm not going to touch you because I love Spider-Man to death.
Yeah.
The other thing I'm curious about is Crash resurrected some people going like, why is this game so hard? Do you know if Spyro was ever like historically difficult? Or
it anything? Was not.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
And also remember that Crash had some issues with control that have been like documented by game developers. This new one has been documented by some game developers, and some they changed the jumping a little bit, so this one was harder than the original, actually.
Mm.
So, I mean, Spyro was never in the "oh, it's super tough," you know, category. At least I've never heard.
Where is it? Hold on.
Yeah, I was looking. I couldn't find it either. Oh, okay.
That's the other one. Jeez, talk about a game that has not been talked about at all: Shadow of the Tomb Raider.
Oh.
Right in between Spider-Man and Spyro.
So Shadow of the Tomb Raider, huh, I haven't really heard much about it other than it being announced. That's interesting.
Same here. Just got announced and I was like, right. And because we talked about that. We're like, where's the discussion? Where's the buzz? Where's anything for it? And you were like, well, the movies came out. Maybe this is the time where they feel there's some interest there.
Yeah.
I'm looking at these screenshots for Spyro. I gotta say, he's adorable. They did a good job with the visuals. It looks like, I don't know how to describe it. It looks like a cute thing I want to get involved in. I'll say that much. Because that's one thing that the Crash remake did really well. It like sold the emotion through the animation and the new visuals. Like, it gave an updated feeling to Crash that we couldn't previously have. So that's why I'm kind of looking forward to Spyro, if I can get my hands on it, especially now that Shadow of the Tomb Raider. I mean, like, I've never been a big Tomb Raider guy, but it's something I'm definitely going to keep my eye out for and try to review.
Did you not play Rise?
I got it. I played a little bit of it and I stopped.
Holy shit. Rise is good, man. Yeah, that's crazy.
This was, when did that game come out? 2015?
Well, it depends, yeah, because Xbox was, it had that year of maybe 2 years of exclusivity.
Yeah, that's funny, because around 2016 is when I really was like, you know, because during, I've always been a guy who's like, I got to beat the games that I buy. I've just always been that person. But since 2016, I've really, like, I keep a list of games I beat. Like, each time I beat one, I write it down, I put a star next to it if I think it's, like, in a Game of the Year contention or something I want to talk about later. But so that game wasn't even during a time that, like, I was, you know, I could drop this if I want. I just must have not.
Do you think it's because it's Uncharted? And maybe, I don't think I've ever heard you say you're a huge Uncharted fan. And I think you're not a huge Uncharted fan.
You'd be entirely correct, my friend.
maybe that's it, just that overlap.
It definitely has to be. Because what's weird is I like Uncharted 1 a lot. 2 I enjoyed. But I tried 3, and it was like, I don't like this that much.
Sure.
And 4 didn't look like enough to grab me. And then what was the other one? Lost Legacy, I think it's called.
Lost Legacy, yeah.
Yeah, and that one, like, you know, at that point, it's beyond the point of me caring. Because I feel like, hilariously enough, I feel like it's almost The Last of Us that ruined it for me. Because The Last of Us is so fucking good. Not that Uncharted isn't, but I love The Last of Us. And it's definitely more up my alley. It's post-apocalyptic. It's darker. It's, you know, more atmospheric. But I look at it and I'm like, how does the same studio that made, like, a lighthearted Indiana Jones-esque adventure of Uncharted, which I think gets a little more emotional apparently in, like, 4 and Lost Legacy. But how from that studio do we get The Last of Us?
I'll say this. If that is truly how you feel, and you figure out later that it's the reason why maybe you're not a big fan of 4 and stuff is because of that, 4, just like you said, and Lost Legacy do an incredible job darkening it up. I don't want to say much more than that. It's just that it is happy-go-lucky in a weird way, because every time Drake goes into something, you're like, he'll come out.
Yeah.
Of the other side, right? Like, he'll just have a smirk and he'll come out. But what's cool about 4 and then side characters, Lost Legacy, is the fact that it's not necessarily that you could die. And I don't want to say much more than that, but there's some pretty heavy stuff even at the starting. I did an actual video about a part in Uncharted 4 that I think is probably one of the best jobs with foreshadowing of a character's future I've ever seen in a game. Like, I think I've ever seen, I mean, many times in, like, even a book, where when I was playing it, you're just going, like, is the, you know, and some people didn't pick up on it, some did. They did a good job darkening it up, because I think they learned. Because I don't think you're the first person who said Last of Us was the shit, and then from that point on, maybe, you know, it was more difficult to jump into that lighter fare. But I think they also changed a little bit and darkened it up.
Yeah, I mean, because it's not like the series is bad, but it's definitely something with the, I don't know, I like third-person shooters. I like adventure open titles that encourage exploration and collecting and questing, that type of thing. So it's very weird. I think Tomb Raider, I might have just been playing at the wrong time, to tell you the truth. I think, I want to say that was the year I got a Wii U. And I know that sounds hilarious. You dropped games for a Wii U, but I was playing Bayonetta 2 and Smash on my.
You only have a certain amount of time.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, like, I think other games caught my attention, and I just never picked it back up. And you just kept rolling with all those new games, and it was like, all right, see you later, Tomb Raider.
But yeah, good game though.
Yeah, it's definitely one I want to get back to. Like, once we finally start seeing things on Shadow, I'm definitely gonna, if I like what I see, take a peak Beckett rise, because especially now it's on PS4. Yeah, it's not like I hated it. It just, the story was, what the fuck was I doing, man? Story was decent, although I predicted a character twist pretty easily, but still. Very, very interesting. You know, that's the thing with so many people. I think all of us are guilty at one point or another of saying, like, hey, I dropped the game and I have no fucking clue why. Or I,
yeah, right. Yeah.
There are some people who blow my mind. They're like, yeah, I bought the game a month ago. It's still in its package seal. I haven't tried it out yet. I'm like, what? What? How? that's one that always gets me. But back to Spyro. There was also a listing for the Switch that people are thinking it's going to be coming there, too. Do you think this is more appealing of a way to maybe jump into Spyro? I think it fits the platform very well.
Yeah.
It's more kid-friendly. Yeah, I think that's really good. It gets a younger generation maybe experiencing what people grew up with.
And I think that, depending on the gameplay style, some things do work well on a, you know, like a portable system versus some don't work well on a portable system for various reasons of comfort or use. And I think Spyro, at least from what most likely it will be, will probably work really well. Also, it's not necessarily like it requires fucking Doom like reflexes. So if it did, I think you'd be fucked. So the idea of being able to jump in there on the Switch would be really awesome if that ends up being the truth.
Absolutely. I think that would be a good fit for it. I'm curious what the Platinum Trophy is going to be like for it. Because I know Crashes wasn't super difficult if you had played it before. But if you were a first-timer like me, you just look at it and go, no way. Because some of them, I think, were speedrunning and collectible ones. And I was like, no chance. No chance. So, curious to see how Spyro's Platinums look. Because I know you're not crazy about trophies. I personally enjoy them.
I think I have mine off now that I think about it. Because I was like,
so wild.
There was something in you when you said there's something.
Live life
crashed
on the edge.
I do on the edge, out of control. Yeah. I certainly think it's awesome. Other people like it. It's a collectible, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like some people like a certain type, and other people like another type. That's really all it is.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly almost envy you for caring so little about it. Because there was a point in time where I was buying games just to trophy hunt and achievement hunt. I loved it,
painful.
Though. It was so much fun. You know, I was buying SpongeBob games to achievement hunt, man. It was a blast. But
at least you got to experience stuff you wouldn't have experienced otherwise.
Exactly. I mean, and they were good times gaming. Like, that's why I picked up Rage and played it for the fourth time. I was like, I got the achievements. Why don't I get the trophies? And I just played it again. You know, it's one of those experiences where the game stuck with me more afterwards. So that's interesting that you say you're just fully disabled now. The progression of your trophies and achievements never ceases to amaze.
Put my sunglasses on. My fucking eyes are killing me. Jesus.
No problem. Yeah, for those watching, Carrick's at the computer all day until we record at this point in our day.
And look at my eyes, Maddie. Can you see
the bright lights?
Googly eye. Yeah. So when it comes to achievement hunting, do you have there's a website that you can go for, like PS4 trophies? Mm-hmm. Do you have an account there?
No.
Oh, you just do your tracking on the PS4?
Yeah. Yeah, because I feel it's almost like when you're a YouTuber, I'm sure you understand this. Like, you start looking at everyone's channel, you enjoy their success, but you're like, man, what the fuck am I doing? Like, I want to grow in this way. I want to do this. I want to do that. And you know, I feel like it's the same way with trophies. You start looking outside. There's always gonna be someone with a higher trophy level than you, more platinums than you. It's not there to put you down, but you're like, fuck. You know, I need to really go for that. And so for me, I just like having my self condensed adventures and and pushing on and feeling like I'm achieving some goals. But yeah, I'd use guides at times online if it was one that just the description made no fucking sense.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Shadow of Mordor was one I got the platinum for, and there was I always go to this one. I think it was called the White Rider or something like that. And in 2 minutes, you had to get so many kills in the map on a horseback or on not a horseback on a mount.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, what route do I go to find these enemies, take them out? It was just very confusing to me. So stuff like that, trophies like that, but usually in any game, and I think everyone can agree with this, I don't try to succumb to guides. I feel like I'm doing the game a disservice by not figuring it out myself. But that's coming from someone who makes guides for games they really enjoy, so pretty ironic. Anyway, Next bit of news is Divinity Original Sin 2. Easily, in my opinion, one of the best games of 2017. And hands down, one of the best RPGs of all time, as far as I'm concerned, as well. It's coming to consoles. They didn't say anything about Xbox, but it was announced via PlayStation. Coming sometime this year, we don't have an exact date yet, but it's going to be the full co-op, full game. Carrick, what do you think about this game? You excited for a port?
Yeah, I am.
And you had an not to cut you off, I forgot. You also had interesting stat. You had an interesting stat.
Yeah, it was like I was I was reading this morning, and they're saying like people who did something like less than 10% of the game, like they bought it, and they did less than 10% of the game is like 75% of the people. So a massive number of people bought it, played it, didn't dislike it at all, but they did something that we talked about prior to the podcast, which is, and just a second ago you talked about, where they just sort of walked away. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that's, you know, fatigue in a big game, which you had stated, I think off camera prior, you had stated It was, even the small starting area feels like an entire game in and of itself. So I could certainly see that. It is coming for Xbox. I did just check.
Okay.
So it'll be out for both. I mean, it's cool. It is weird, though, because that may not be the... It'll be interesting to see who picks it up, because it may not be the right group. Mm-hmm. You know, there might be some people who are like, that's a, you know, PC title. You know how sometimes you'll hear somebody say, like, that's a PC title, even though we usually argue and are like, what does that really mean versus a console? Yeah. But if you're going to... It just depends on how it translates, how the control translates. Control's such a big deal in that game, mm-hmm. and how how you're able to place people and stuff. Will that work with a controller? There's some questions there that they have to dial in.
Have you played Divinity Enhanced Edition on PS4 or Xbox? Okay.
Divinity, I just want to make sure you're talking about Divinity and not Pillars of Eternity.
No, Divinity, yes. Pillars is also there. Enhanced. I actually almost bought that yesterday for console, but I was like, no. Because the second one's coming out, I think it's this month.
So. Yeah, it's coming out at the end of this month, I think.
Yeah, so I'm curious to see how that is. But, Divinity. So I played it on console. I played it on PC first. I enjoyed it a lot. But actually, this was in 2014, I believe. I didn't really get around to finishing it. I think I got about 10 hours in, which would I say would, funny enough, be around that mark for that game. I dropped it. Comes out on PS4, my friend and I are like, wait, it's two-player co-op. We pick it up together, in love with it. It's one of my favorite RPGs of all time. Just really, 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 really like that game. And I thought they did an excellent job with the port, with the conversations, with the UI, as well as with the management and combat, how they kind of almost turn it into tile-based rather than dragging your mouse all around. Little changes like that stuck out to me. And I was going to say, I had really big confidence with this second game, but I wanted to hear your thoughts on the PS4 version for the first game.
I was just going to ask, did you, when you played it though, are you going to beat it, or is it a game where you feel like it's too big on the console as well?
Are you talking about the first one or the second one?
Sorry, because you were talking about the first one. Yeah, okay. Scratch that question.
First one I did beat. Second one.
On the console?
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Second one. That's very cool. Very close to the end of my playthrough, but my friend and I, because it's up to 4-player co-op, and so my other friends were like, we want to get in on that. They didn't have a PC. And we were already way deep in the game, and we're like, well, we're very close to beating it. What do you want to do? And then it got announced for consoles, and we're like, halt. I was like, we're going to fucking wait and just play it all together now and go crazy with it. You know, 4-player chaos in that game, it's got to be crazy fun. So I can't wait. I'm so excited.
It is weird that I'm more of a Pillars fan than I am a Divinity fan. Yeah, so like I like Divinity a lot. I think I even put it in the best of that year. But I'm really, you were saying that, you know, the enhanced editions also for the Pillars is also on the consoles. And it's funny because I beat it on the PC and then just like you, you know, started playing on the console and was like, oh, fuck, I really like this on the console. So nice. I think it's awesome. There's a audience there. I do believe that we are getting to a point, and we've talked about this before, where there's so many games, they're coming out so often, and they're coming out so big, that we're getting to this really scary fragmented experience moment where it's going to branch off, and it'll be, it'll be difficult to even talk about some of these because a lot of people are just going to be like you said, I'll buy it, and they sort of collect the title. They don't really buy the title. They collect it. They put it in their, you know, their digital library or whatever, and then they play 5 minutes and walk off, right? Mm-hmm. And it just feels like some of these titles are so big, and then on different platforms spread out is another thing that really bothers me. If they had done this on console and PC at the same time, I would have been really happy because everybody gets to experience it like as they want and at the same time, because I love discussion about video games. But when it's later, there's other stuff. And then I think people go, oh, well, there's other stuff, or I'll get to it. And I hate to see that on some titles. Like, mm-hmm. I want them to play it. But just like you said, I want to get back to Tomb Raider. But I would never stake my life on you doing that. Because the chances are actually much lower than even you would probably assume if you assumed absolutely. Low chances. You know,
it's like there's so many titles. That breathing room, that gaming vacation where you can clear out the backlog, right. That's like non-existent now. It's just you miss it or you play it. I mean, especially with how quickly games fall out of popularity in a heartbeat.
Exactly,
Destiny
dude.
2, exactly. Up here, down here. I think Kingdom Come Deliverance is a great example. I don't like to base game popularity off of my channel views, but, I mean, that game did really well for me, did really well for you. I made a video on the most recent update. It performed very poorly in comparison to the other ones. Like, and that's only a couple weeks after launch, man. Like, you got a short window to make
people are just like, moving on.
And understandably so. Like, if I'm just I don't say it's in a lower fashion, but if I'm in that position, which I have been before, it's been a while, but if I'm in the position of a consumer who's just like, yeah, this is my entertainment, I do this in my free time, I'm on to the next thing, man. Like, you know, I'm not waiting around constantly for these updates. As someone who values their free time, it's different with you and I. It's our job. We have to analyze this patch, check out this update, you know, that kind of thing. It's a little bit different. There's not that obligation there. So, yeah, absolutely. It's a little different. But I'm beyond excited for this Divinity 2 on console. So you said you like Pillars more. What about it do you like more? I'm curious, because I've never played Pillars. I have it on my PC, got it during a Steam sale. It's like my vintage game I bought because I was like, this is a great sale, I just can't pass on it, and I want to support Obsidian. So what about Pillars do you like more than Divinity? Because I'll go first real quick. I just love Divinity because of, and really I fell more in love with it because of its tag system. I think that's one of the best things to enter an RPG. I think it really let the game mold around how you play it. And made there be choice and consequence. It led to multiple playthroughs. The amount of companions you have, companions with depth at that, amount of races. It was such a big RPG is what I'm getting at. So that's why I like it so much. But as someone who likes Pillars more, I'm dying to hear why, because maybe it's a game I can pick up soon.
I will say it's not better than Divinity Original Sin. Liking it more in this case is just enjoying it more.
Okay.
And it's, I think it's because it's a little bit more 1-2-3 than Divinity. Divinity allows for an incredible amount of flexibility. It allows for some crazy ass shit, which there is a time and place for that for me, for sure. But there is also this odd time and place where I want a middle ground. I don't want a dumb game, and I don't want a game where there's almost so many options you get in analysis paralysis, and you're just like, I can't do anything because there's so much to decide. And Pillars is right in the middle where it's mouse driven. I'm also a big Baldur's Gate fan. Okay. So like that's sort of the continuation of those guys, or not those guys, but that kind of game. So that's probably a huge factor as well. I like that viewpoint. I like the way it works. I don't think it's great on console. Control works good, but I don't think it's amazing or anything. But I just like that a little bit more directed experience right now. For some reason, Divinity 1 was huge, and then Divinity 2 comes along, and it's huger. And you're just like,
it's a true sequel,
yeah. And you're like, this is awesome, but I don't even know if I have the bandwidth to experience it.
Okay,
and no, that makes so sense. Pillars was easier.
Absolutely, I've been in that position before where, when I play a lot of open world games, tons of quests, tons of shit to do, the next thing I want to play is like a 10-hour nice action adventure game. Nothing crazy. Actually, if I look at my list real quick, I played Yakuza Kiwami, and then I played Monster Hunter World, and I was like, fuck it, and I went and played Bayonetta 1. So it's like, you know, that, because those are two huge games. I love the Yakuza so much, though. But, you know, those are two big games, open worlds or open levels in the case of Monster Hunter World.
Right.
Loads of content, hours upon hours upon hours, and you're like, okay, I just want more condensed adventure where I had to hit a couple of buttons, shit happens, and I just have eye candy. That's it. So I absolutely feel you on that. That, and especially Divinity Original Sin 2 being the type of game it is, it takes a lot out of you. You know, I always say this, the biggest flaw with that game is you can put like 4 hours in and feel like you got fucking nothing done. It's a project. And
gaming, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It's a project.
Yeah, gaming is, and it still is, I find it fun, but it's gaming supposed to be, and it's perceived as like, I picked this up, I'm having a blast. You know, whether it's something as simple as a multiplayer match of Call of Duty to something as complex as a quest in Divinity Original Sin 2, there's different interpretations of that fun. I think people who want that more immediate fun, which I'd say most of us would like immediate fun, you don't find that in Divinity all the time. You know, so I think you have, it has the chance of, you have one poor session, one fruitless session, and you're like, okay, like you don't shut it off thinking that's the last time you're playing it, but then all of a sudden something looks more appealing the next time you turn on your PS4 and you're like, I'll get back to it, and then the next time you turn it on, not quite yet, and you just never get back to it. So I absolutely understand why personally Divinity Original Sin 2 is not, or rather Pillars is what you prefer over Divinity. Makes complete sense. It makes me want to try Pillars, because I'm right there with you on bandwidth. But now, last topic, this one you fist pumped for before the podcast even began. Splinter Cell is back in a unique way. There's an event happening for Ghost Recon Wildlands, and it's bringing back Sam Fisher, I believe his name is.
Michael Ironside as Sam Fisher.
Ironside as Sam Fisher. All right. Now, you brought up the fact that Microsoft had bought the advertising or something rights for...
Yeah, they bought the marketing... Yeah, the advertising marketing rights for that and a couple other games, which just means we'll see their Xbox stamp on, like, trailers, and usually that means DLC of some kind as well.
Interesting. Okay, so do you think this means we're finally going to have Splinter Cell revived? I mean, Ubisoft said, yeah, we're not abandoning... Splinter Cell, we have plans for it, stuff along those lines. Do you think this is the start to maybe gauge interest on the market, or just put his name out there and then there's something even bigger coming, especially since this is before E3?
Yeah, and you have to also look at that Ubisoft is pretty open lately about mixing and matching IPs. So it's like their Far Cry 5 has the ability to mix and match Assassin's Creed in the arcade level editor with, you know, a Watch Dogs game. They're okay with all this kind of stuff. Predator is now, even though they don't own it, but Predator, Rabbids, and then now you have Sam Fisher, a Splinter Cell kind of addition here. So I think that's awesome. I don't know if we'll see a reboot. Somebody on a forum I was reading to you was saying that if it was considered the new game and its new canon, it would most likely have been the new voice actor. But they did go with Mike Ironside, which is who was replaced, because they said they wanted physical movement matched with the facial tracking at the same time, which a lot of developers were like, what? Because that, you don't necessarily need that. Like, that doesn't make a lot of sense. The sad thing is Mike Ironside's been really ill for the last, like, 10 years of his life. And so I'm wondering also if they just wanted to work with him and now he's back, and maybe they would have worked with the young guy from the new one. I don't remember his name. But I don't necessarily know if we'll see a new Splinter Cell. I would say that if we do, it will be the game that I do not think a lot of people will want to see from a Splinter Cell, and that's a fully open world one.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if Ubisoft can do something that's not open world. Yeah, like, I don't know if they know how. Well, Siege, obviously, and For Honor, but...
No, it's true, though. I definitely... See, but that's the thing, is, like, when you got a game like Splinter Cell Blacklist, you look at Dishonored, like, they thrive in those levels that are specifically designed... Yeah, hub levels, we'll call them, that are specifically designed with special encounters and unique characteristics to each area. When you throw that into an open world, then the open world just has its own personality, we'll say. And it makes the areas around it, when it's a Ubisoft world, usually not as special.
Yeah.
Far Cry 5 did a pretty good job, I'd say, of adding context to most locations you went to. You were talking about the crossing over a little bit. I noticed one thing is, like, they have been doing that for a while. I think in Assassin's Creed 4, you could go into the codex or the files for the movie company that you were at for the Animus project. And if you went in there, you'd see that there was something.
It was
about,
in Watch Dogs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was in Watch Dogs. I forgot what the name of the company was. And then on top of that, I was playing Far Cry 5 the other day, some co-op, and my friend was meeting Herc for the first time. I took him. I was like, you gotta see this guy. You're gonna love him. And, you know, there was like a stack of boxes and it said like Rook Island shit. I think, where was the Far Cry 4 set? Like Kyrat, I think.
Yeah.
It said like on a box next to the little hut that, that Herc is in, it said like Kyrat shit. Like, it was like a little reference to previous games. And so I've always noticed Ubisoft's been big on those types of Easter eggs, on referencing their own stuff, like saying, hey, we made this too. And mixing and matching universes. So this seems like more of the same from them. But I also hope it's a tease for the future, because you and I were talking about it a while ago, and I liked Splinter Cell Blacklist a lot. I really enjoyed that.
Do you wonder also if, I mean, so Hitman, they sold the rights, and now you've got... Who was it that announced a couple days ago? They're doing the publishing of the definitive edition of Hitman. I can't remember. The news just came out like last week. But you have a Hitman style game. Then you have Metal Gear Phantom Pain. But you have that producer leaving, and you have the new one Survive not doing so well. Mm-hmm. So the reason why I was worried that Ubisoft will do open world is because that Phantom Pain was highly successful, and so I wonder if they think, oh, well, we can do an open world, you know, because that was an open world, you know, type game. And I could see like, oh, we're going to inject Sam Fisher behind
Warner
the
Brothers.
Scenes in the, oh, thank you. It was Warner. Gah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, that'll work out well. But it that's the thing that makes me wonder is if, you know, for a while now, they maybe were looking at Phantom Pain and they were like, okay, this did work. How would we do it? Because if you injected a Sam Fisher into Nicaragua somewhere in some jungle, it could be really fun. But I do. I agree. Like, I'm a Splinter Cell and Dishonored and Thief even. There's a couple games that work better in a hub for whatever reason. We could do an entire podcast about the reasons. But they do. They just, or for a lot of people, they do.
Well, I put it this way. You look at Splinter Cell Blacklist, how it played. It had, its stealth stuff, its gadgets, and if you wanted to play aggressively, you could. You put that in an open world, you have Ghost Recon Wildlands.
Exactly. You know. Or you have Phantom Pain, which is more like just, we're going to shoot you from afar. Like, that's not really Sam Fisher, who is doing split-legged fucking... You know, the split legs over somebody's head and dropping down on them, and more of a close-up assassin. So
exactly, yeah. So I don't feel it would work, but I agree. It's like, can you imagine Ubisoft making anything outside of an open world? When was the last time? I guess Mario and Rabbids, right? Last time Ubisoft made a game that was more condensed.
I mean, For Honor, you could consider somewhat. You know, it's hub based, and then you could consider Siege level based. But those are based on different IPs, and I think that those don't make as much sense open world like a Splinter Cell does. Mm-hmm. But making sense versus making a good game are totally different things.
Yeah,
and that's what I worry about, only because I like Splinter so much, or Splinter Cell so much. That's the only reason I worry, is because I just fucking really liked those games.
Absolutely. So when I look at all this news we've talked about, this one really being the final piece of news we have, it brought to mind one question. What's with all the big announcements before E3? Do you think developers and publishers are collectively trying to be a little more transparent, out there about their announcements, and it's not about E3 being the big place to reveal it, and more so about just doing it in their own time and what's right for their product?
Yeah, less leaks, right?
Yeah, that too.
You can't, if you know something in February and you try to hold that data until, June or July, there's really good chance somebody's going to leak that. Mm-hmm. So it's... I think a lot of it's because of leaks. A lot of it is because the companies are like, hey, you know what? We'll show you stuff, but we won't necessarily announce a bunch of new stuff because we have our own events for that. That's another thing. These companies all do their own events now. Everyone. Microsoft's got its own event. Well, the big three, sorry. Microsoft. Well, wait a minute. I think Ubisoft has an event somewhere as well. Then there's Gamescom, the one that's even bigger than E3 that's in Europe.
Yeah.
And then there's 85 PAXs. There's so many fucking PAXs. Like, you and I will be like, are you going to PAX? Which PAX, dude?
Yeah.
There, you know, matter of fact, I think there's a PAX going on in, like, Australia right now or something. Like, there's always an event. But I think you're right. I think those companies are just like, let's step back. Let's do what we want to do. Maybe we'll show people this stuff at E3. If we're inviting fans anyway, let's have them play the stuff versus just look at it. Because that's more interesting. Yeah. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, I just look at it and say, you know, or think, these early announcements, these earlier releases, it feels like it has Red Dead altered the landscape for 2018 almost entirely. I feel like things are a little off this year. I can't help but think that way just because of, you know, the last time, I mean, like a highly anticipated game like Spider-Man getting its release date 2 months before E3. Like, imagine... In another dimension where we're watching E3 and you watch, it's like, what, June 12th or something, and you find out Spider-Man's coming out September 7th then, that's like a bigger wow moment. Do they think, like, Red Dead's going to be at E3? Rockstar is going to be at E3 for once? Because there was that rumor that I think it was last year or the year beforehand, Sony was supposed to have Red Dead 2 gameplay, and they never did. Like, a deal fell through, something, because, like, everyone felt it was lacking that punch, when, in all actuality, it might have just been a bad show, like a Bethesda last year. But, you know, a lot of people, with that being in mind, you know, I just wonder if there's an attempt to sidestep something big coming at E3.
I would assume everybody's nervous about it. Fuck, I'm nervous about Rockstar, and I don't even sell games. Like, that's you did the math one time. It was like 6 years, right? And since the last game they did, since
2013.
So 2013. So sorry,
2013.
Yeah, so it'll be 5 years since they did. That was the release of the 360 version of Okay, so that's a fucking long time. Then you have the fact that online did so well for them that basically they just own the universe right now. Like, the amount of money that they make is redonkulous. And so I would assume, I heard somebody else get mad and they were like, I can't believe we're saying people are watching out. That's good business practice. Any company scout, or any football team scouts out another football team. Any UFC fighter checks out how the other fighter fights and goes towards their own strengths and the enemy's weaknesses. That's how you actually do well. Yeah, you know, so to me, it makes total sense for them, for a lot of companies to be like, whoa, let's put the brakes on or let's accelerate, because it makes sense to spend maybe $200,000 extra a month ahead so that you can release it early, hire people to come in, do some crunch, whatever, or lose $200,000 to $300,000 and delay it a little bit either way, because if you release anywhere near that game, it's also the fact that the YouTubers, Twitch people, reviewers will be playing that game.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? So it's like, true. Even if it is a great
influence
game,
influence is gone.
Yeah, influence is gone. And it's hard. If I'm not talking about it or you're not talking about it, then, you know, either a bigger YouTuber is or a smaller one is. There's always somebody. But if it scales down, then suddenly you don't have a lot of eyes on your title that might be really good. Yeah. Look at Deep Rock Galactic. It technically did well, but it lost out to Sea of Thieves. Deep Rock Galactic released a little bit before Sea of Thieves and Vermintide. And I think it released in a poor time because it could have done much better had there not been like a, oh, there's Deep Rock. Oh, but Vermintide comes out next week or 2 weeks later. What happened? You have to watch out, man. And there's no bigger release, is there,
you know,
in gaming?
Yeah, I honestly, I almost feel close-minded after you put that point out there, like of a UFC fighter studying his opponent before a fight. It's like it makes so much sense for them just to look at the company and go, why not get it out as soon as possible? I guess it's more so the overlap of, like, crunching's bad and rushing products is bad. But, you know, if you're trying to beat out the biggest game in 5 years at this point.
Is crunching bad or is releasing terribly worse?
Well, when I talk crunching, I mean for the developers themselves. I mean, I've read crunch stories.
Sorry, I was saying because what if they crunch and it sucks? But they do well. Or what if they don't crunch and don't do well? Then they're out of job.
Yeah, I know it's kind of a part of the industry. I feel bad when I read those stories, man.
For sure.
Some of these guys just, you know, work so hard tirelessly and don't see their families and stuff. I mean, it sucks. So it's like, that's the other thing. I'm like, is that what's coming because of Red Dead? You know, like, Insomniac, like, oh yeah, maybe they are ready. You know, the game looks great, so maybe they're not crunching, but it's in.
And crunching also, it could be a crunch, you know, it could also just be, let's spend more money to hire people to test or whatever. Mm. That's not necessarily the same kind of crunch you and I are talking about, which is the sleep under your desk, eat old pizza because you can't leave, you can't take a shower. I think a lot of companies also are starting to get, not all of them, but some companies, and Insomniac has never been rumored to be that way, ever.
Absolutely. Very
so true. I would assume if there's a company out there that's like, fuck that, we'll delay it versus make people hate life because we want them to stay. So hopefully, maybe they just looked at it and were like, I mean, maybe they just decided we do, you know, this time frame works for us too. It's completely possible.
It definitely looks like it's well on track.
It does. It looks, I know they said alpha, like you said, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. It looks pretty far along.
All right. Well, that concludes all the news that we have for this week. It was a spectacular week. While it was one of our shorter episodes, I think that was one of our most quality filled, thought provoking discussions we've had in a good amount of time. I mean, that was a blast, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so,
I'm just looking real quick.
Oh, give me
1 second.
For it.
I want to see if the delay. Remember, I was saying Spider-Man was delayed?
Yes. Yeah, I was looking that up, and I think it was, actually.
It was. So what we worry about, yeah, I'm just reading. The game is delayed, but it's still happening. Scheduled release is now 2018 fall. So my question is that maybe it's just a situation where
it fell in the right time.
It fell in the right time, exactly. And they do have it done. Or
yeah, if they delayed it already, then yeah, you'd assume
exactly.
They took the time. All right, so then yeah, I'm definitely wrong there. Awesome, that's great to hear then. I hope that's the case.
So do I, because if it's not the case, then you have a whole other smorgasbord with Insomniac, which I just don't see them doing.
I don't
like,
either.
Have we ever heard anything about them?
They're too
fun. Yeah, I've never heard a single thing come out of that. I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe somebody will correct me in the comments, but I don't think I've ever heard any bad talk about him.
Only bad thing is Fuse, from what I've seen.
The game Fuse?
Yeah,
that was not a good game.
Yeah. Other than that, though, they're in good standings with Sunset Overdrive, Ratchet and Clank. Damn, Spyro apparently, but they're not making this new version of it. And now Spider-Man. So we shall see. Carrick, any last words?
Stay tuned, because next week is the... Next week's, like, what do we got? Extinction, God of War. Next week's got a couple big titles.
Isn't
so.
God of War the 20th?
God of War's the 20th, but the reviews are the 12th.
Oh, yeah. And, yep. All right. So,
yeah.
That'll be a busy time for us.
We'll see who has reviews on that game and what they say.
I'm looking forward to seeing how that game's received.
I've been
reading some good things, so we shall see. But, hashtag for this week shall be I wonder what the viewer thinks when we get quiet and think of a hashtag. Do they get like, did my phone stop working? Like, you know, or like, did my headphones just break?
Boy, it's hard. What dominated the conversation? Villain superhero games dominated the conversation.
Could do hashtag villains.
Hashtag villains. That works for me.
I like that one. All right.
Because I would like to see what people say, too, in the comments, and so we can talk about it next week. Because that kind of thing, if somebody can figure out how it would be done, I would almost want to pay them to go talk to a developer.
Awesome. So, yeah, if you got to this point in the podcast, the hashtag is villains. Let us know what you thought of this episode. We're looking forward to the conversation in the comments down below. I think we offered a lot to talk about. We'll catch you guys in episode 152. Peace out.